welcome everyone to our weekly radio teleconference for February 14th. This week there are a number of things happening in Congress and in the Senate specifically. I'll just hit a few of them and then we'll go to the questions. On the Senate floor is the Stock Act, the Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge Act. There are a number of amendments to that act that are going to be debated, and so the Senate will probably spend most of this week on that act. We are also continuing the payroll tax conference report, and as you know, I'm one of the conferees on that conference. We are heavily debating the various issues to see if we can bring them to a resolution. Just as a quick reminder, the issues that the conference is focusing on are, first, the extension of the payroll tax holiday, which is the Social Security tax relief that's about $800 to $1,000 per person as it goes, as it works its way throughout the year. The second thing that we are dealing with is the reform and extension of the unemployment insurance system. And the third thing that we are dealing with is the extension of the fix in Medicare for the compensation system for physicians, which is required because under current law, fewer and fewer physicians will even take Medicare patients because of the compensation system that has been put into place there that actually causes them to lose money in terms of taking Medicare patients. They can't even cover their overhead. And so those are the three main issues. The biggest parts of the debate, however, are not over whether to do those three things. Republicans and Democrats alike agree that we need to do each of those three things. The debate is over whether to pay for it or to just put the cost of this onto the national debt. And as you might guess, there is a very vigorous debate ongoing, both with regard to whether to pay for it and with regard to how to do so. I strongly believe that we should offset it so that we have a deficit neutral package, and there are a number of offsets that we have already identified that we could move forward with. At this point, however, we do not have a conclusion, and my hope is that we will be able to get that done within the next week. Last thing I will say is the president came out with his fiscal year 2013 budget yesterday, and it's a very disappointing budget in my opinion. Once again, the approach taken by the president is to propose significant amounts of new taxes, somewhere in the neighborhood of $1.6 to $2 trillion of new taxes, and to fail to propose any significant reduction of spending over the same time frame. And this is a 10-year budget, which would mean that if we followed it, we would not significantly reduce spending for another decade. And frankly, we simply have to get on with an aggressive, comprehensive deficit reduction package that focuses heavily on reducing the growth of the federal government and controlling it and actually making the federal government smaller, not larger. And so we're going to have some very significant battles this week over what our approach to the fiscal year 2013 budget truly should be. With that, let me stop and go on to questions. And Samantha, you are first on my list today.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I understand you and Jim Rice are challenging the insurance mandate in the Supreme Court.
Yes. Yes, Senator Risch and I have joined 41 other of our colleagues in filing an amicus brief with the Supreme Court that will support the challenge to the Obamacare bill that was passed last year, a year before now. And frankly, the purpose of this is to seek to bring some common sense to the government's approach to our health care. The individual mandate in this bill is an approach that Senator Risch and I both think is unconstitutional, and it forms the centerpiece, if you will, or the foundation of the entire health care bill that was passed just a little over a year ago. My hope is that the Supreme Court will agree with this challenge And if so, my hope is that the Supreme Court will rule that the entire health care bill that was enacted must be revisited, because it's all based on the implementation of this individual mandate. If that is the case, I think that we can get past one of the most bitter battles that we engaged in as we fought over this health care bill, and hopefully get on to some of the very positive solutions that I know there is broad bipartisan support for, that will help us to truly reduce the cost of health care and to truly increase access to health care for those who currently don't have meaningful access.
I noticed in the press release it says if there's an individual mandate, what's to stop Congress from making us all buy vitamins?
Yeah, I mean, when you start thinking about it, this is the first time, I think, that I'm aware of at least, that Congress has ever actually tried to force people to purchase a specific product. And if the government is allowed to do that, then we have gone a huge step beyond where any of us here ever thought that the federal government could go. And I personally believe that there is a very sound foundation for the challenge that is being brought in the Supreme Court. Thank you. Next is Jay.
Good morning, Senator. Got a kind of a philosophical question for you, get your opinion on something. In light of the budget proposal yesterday and the tax increases that are being called for, at the same time, here in Boise, the city's going to ask us to increase our property taxes to help them balance their books. We've got the Boise School District, the Nampa School District, the Meridian School District looking for levy increases, and now we're hearing that even Boise State is going to ask the Board of Education for a $17.5 million bond issue to build more athletic facilities there at Boise State, and of course that will probably get repaid with tax dollars. And just overall, I mean, we're getting it from all sides, state, local, and national. Everyone is looking to get into the taxpayers' pockets. Have we gone tax crazy in this country?
I personally believe that we have gone tax crazy. The way I've put it many times is that, at least at the federal level, and you can see it repeating itself at other levels of government, we are in a tax and spend mentality. The argument is often made that it's the government that creates jobs, and that if we want a strong economy, then we need to have a powerful, large federal government that pumps money into the economy. You'll recall just a year or so back the $800 billion stimulus package, a pure increase in the national debt that was supposed to really jumpstart our economy and drive the unemployment rates down, and it has phenomenally failed to do that. But the idea is that that is agreed to by so many is that we can get out of our problems by just spending ourselves through it, and that more spending is the solution. Well, that additional spending, of course, has to be supported by more taxes. And that's why you see the president proposing almost $2 trillion of new taxes in his budget. And that's why you see a lot of these proposals that you just described at other levels of government for increasing the revenue needed. And the bottom line is that we need to have a wholesale readjustment of our thinking about how to deal with our debt crisis. And we must do so in a way that reduces spending and that reforms our tax codes in ways that actually make our tax system more competitive, less complex, and less expensive to comply with. And economists and other analysts across the board say that if we would approach taxes in that way, we could actually reduce tax rates and stimulate the economy so strongly that we would generate greater levels of tax revenue to deal with the revenue side of the equation.
Thank you.
Thank you. George, are you on? You're next on the list. All right, let's go on to Leslie.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm trying to choose among my questions here. This area of the state probably has some of the highest gas prices in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear all this about the North Dakota oil fields. Everyone is moving there for the job boom.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the oil going as our gas prices keep rising?
You mean specifically the oil for the Keystone
yes.
XL pipeline?
Yes.
Well, there is a huge battle in Congress right now over the president's and the administration in general failure to give the necessary approvals and authorizations permitting for that pipeline to be constructed. And the effort that's underway in Congress right now is essentially to force the administration to have to approve the project. It's already gone through so many levels of analysis, and it's already received so much approval from the process that the continued roadblocks that are being thrown in the way of it are not justifiable. It's a $7 billion pipeline, which is going to provide a phenomenal stimulus in terms of jobs right now. But the key is that it will help us to reduce our dependence on foreign oil and to help us build our oil infrastructure in a way that will be a key part of our national energy policy. In other words, help us to take one very big step toward being less dependent on other sources of oil. Now, some criticize this by saying, well, this oil that's being brought in is just going to be marketed outside the United States. And that's a misconstruction of what is actually going to be happening. But what happens is the oil comes into our refineries, to our American refineries, is refined, and then some of it is sold here, some of it is sold overseas. But the point is that, here's an example, Europe wants the diesel much more than we do because they have a heavier reliance on diesel. We want the normal gasoline more than Europe does. And so what happens is our refineries will trade, and we'll send diesel to them. They'll send gasoline to us. And the bottom line is we still have a significant reduction of our dependence on foreign sources for these supplies.
But is that North Dakota oil, that vast resource, is that getting to our refineries now? What's happening to it?
No, that's a different issue. This Keystone pipeline is to get oil from Canada down into our refineries. If we were to be successful enough in developing the oil in North Dakota, and we are making some progress there, then that oil, too, I presume, could be moved in this pipeline. But the question there is whether the administration will give the necessary permits and authorize the necessary activities to aggressively develop the oil there, not just in North Dakota, but in many, many parts of the country, including offshore. And we continue to have disagreements with the president on this. The president says he's willing to open these areas up for even more aggressive development. But so far, his actions don't match that rhetoric.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. And next, Jason Ford.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm talking about the president's budget. The one thing that was in there, it talked a little bit about the money for the Secure Rural Schools Act. And I was wondering if you saw that or if it's enough, you think, for the West or how that works out.
Well, the president, as I said, has put forth a very spendy budget. We are still in the process of analyzing it. And there are going to be areas of the budget that I agree with, where the president has made certain proposals, for example, not just the secure rural schools, but the transportation system for our country, which I think needs to be adequately funded so that we can maintain a strong infrastructure in our country. All that being said, we need to do it in a way that develops a very rigorous path to reducing the overall federal budget. And so although I haven't analyze the details of the Secure Rural Schools funding levels yet, I'm confident that that's one of the areas in the budget where I'm going to be much more likely to be in agreement with the president rather than disagreeing with him. And let me explain also, just for listeners who might not specifically understand the Secure Rural Schools issue. Right now, Idaho and many western states have significant portions of their land owned by the federal government. And many of our counties have such high percentages of federal government land ownership that it becomes a financial burden to them because that land is not in their tax base. And so the federal government, by exempting itself from paying property taxes, has made it so that those counties have lost major sources of revenue to proceed. I perceive the Secure Rural Schools Act as a way of the federal government saying, look, we won't let you tax us through the property tax system, but we do recognize that our ownership of land in your boundaries is a burden to you, and we will compensate for that. And I believe it's a very proper compensation by the federal government to the states, or in this case to the counties, to assist them. This goes right into our schools and our infrastructure and law enforcement and other activities at the county level.
All right. Thank you.
All right, that covers it. I appreciate everybody getting on today. I apologize we missed this a time or two recently. It's been incredibly busy here. But we'll do everything we can to make sure that we're on next week at this time.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.